Chapter 16. Coruscant. The weeks after the military disaster at Corellia did not argue for a quick resolution to the conflict. Fondor, a world well known for its orbital shipyards, a world whose economy had been chafing under Galactic Alliance military production restrictions, announced its resignation from the Alliance and signed articles of friendship with Corellia and her allies. It was just one more world, increasing the size of the Confederation, no longer being referred to as the Corellian Confederation at the indignant insistence of Bethawi and Commonor, from three systems to four. But of those four systems, two, Corellia and Fondor, possessed ship construction yards that were critical to Alliance military development. Fondor's loss lit up the Holonews services. Soon after, Bespin, with its crucial production facilities for Tibana gas, and Adumar, with its munitions industry, also joined the Confederation. And other worlds were wavering. The worlds of Hutt Space made no secret of their preference for the Confederation, or of their willingness to remain staunch, warm friends of the Alliance so long as they received special trade and aid privileges that would pour wealth into their accounts. Several planets of the Imperial Remnant, long uncomfortable with being part of the Alliance, suggested that they favored the Confederation. But the Moff Council continued to abide by its treaties with the Alliance. Grand Admiral Pelion, recently retired and returned to the world of Bastion, participating in the ongoing process of rebuilding and repopulating the Imperial throne world, spoke openly and often of the Empire's need to remain associated with the Alliance. During these weeks, there were only sporadic clashes between the Alliance and the Confederation. Admiral Limpin's task force at Corellia made frequent raids against the Corellian shipyards, the still-intact Centerpoint Station, and industrial facilities on the other worlds allied with Corellia, though these were largely inconclusive. The Confederation forces in the Bethawi system succeeded with minimal effort in driving Alliance observation vehicles into retreat. Neither side pressed an assault. The Confederation worlds sat back, tightened their defenses, sent diplomats with offers of friendship to scores of systems, and cranked up their ship production to epic levels. The Alliance brought military forces back from distant stations and patrols, gathered information, and enhanced security. Mostly, the war was fought in the news feeds, with analysts predicting where the next major action would be fought, who would start it, and how it would end. Admiral Matrik Klauskin, recently vanished from a hospital on Coruscant, turned up on his homeworld of Commonor. His handlers transmitted to Coruscant the resignation of his commission with the Galactic Alliance military. At a dinner on Commonor, he was recognized as a hero of his planet and was ceremoniously retired. He was not observed to speak much during the celebration, and close observers described him as unresponsive and glassy-eyed. Galactic Alliance Military Headquarters, Senior Officers' Briefing Room.
"The so-called Chasen document," said General Tycho Selchew, "is authentic."
A tall, elegantly handsome man with blonde hair frosting to white, he radiated confidence and competence. Admiral Neothel was not concerned with what the human military analyst radiated. Her eyes vibrated with her agitation.
"It can't be, General. We had no plans to invade Commonor."
"Yes, we did," Tycho assured her, 30 years ago. That settled Neothel a bit, piquing her curiosity. The statement obviously had the same effect on the other senior officers present. Neothel heard muttering from up and down the long table.
"Please continue," she said, cutting off the side conversations.
Back when the Rebel Alliance was mounting its campaign for the liberation of crucial planetary systems of the Empire, Tycho said, General Garm Bel Iblis drew up a number of plans for individual systems. The Chasen document, recently obtained for us by intelligence, is a revision of Bel Iblis's Operation Blue Plug. Blue Plug was never launched because Commonore voluntarily ousted its Imperial governor a few months after Coruscant fell to us.
Were the details of Operation Blue Plug ever made public?
Neothel asked.
Tycho shook his head. No, they've been classified top secret for decades. Classified and forgotten, owing to their irrelevance. I wasn't aware of them. But when I began doing my analysis of the Chasen document, I was struck by how thoroughly it resembled General Bel Iblis's preferred logistical patterns. At first I thought it must have been drawn up by a student of the General's. But then it occurred to me that the plan made no provisions for the use of the most modern classes of ships, and that made me suspicious. So I went looking through the records.
I see. And do we have any indication of how the original plan fell into the hands of someone who might revise it and pass it off to the Kaminoans?
Yes. A touch of dismay was visible through Tycho's controlled manner. Our security has been compromised. An analysis of the databanks where that file was stored indicated that the only times it had been accessed in recent years was when automated backup programming refreshed it and compared it with static stored copies. Military programmers could find no other signs of intrusion. So I requested assistance from intelligence, which revealed the method used. Murmurs from other active duty officers cut him off. Tycho glanced impassively around the table. Neothel knew the general was in disfavor with his colleagues for bringing in an outsider. She, too, regretted that General Selchu had exposed a security flaw to outsiders, but she also applauded the fact that he'd solved the problem.
By intelligence, in this case, Neothel said. You mean your wife?
Yes. Tycho's wife, Winter, was a long-time operative. She'd been a field agent back when the New Republic had been an ideal rather than a reality. She had helped rear the Alliance's most popular son, Jason Solo. Solo was one of the officers at the table, and he listened dispassionately, not reacting when Winter was mentioned. Tycho continued, Winter discovered that the backup code had been replaced. It was still doing its job, but it was additionally sending those files to an off-site location. Once we knew what to look for, we found similar programs backing up other banks of data. This programming was self-replicating and could have spread itself through our entire military network, but we caught it in time. It had accessed only older files and some ordnance inventories.
And your actions?
We scrubbed the malignant code and turned over pertinent details to military intelligence, Galactic Alliance intelligence, and the Galactic Alliance Guard. We could have used their intrusion for disinformation purposes, but this would have been a massive undertaking. The enemy would presumably have noticed if their code had stopped spreading through our network, so maintaining the secret would have called for building an entire second network, full of a combination of false data and non-critical genuine data, and updating it at the same rate the real network is updated. Neothel nodded. Such an operation was possible to execute, but it would have been a tremendous drain on resources.
Do we know how our systems were violated?
In part, Tycho said. Verifiable records suggest that the initial code slicing took place during a routine data inquiry using a GAG passcode. That did get Jason's attention. Ridiculous, he said. Tycho regarded him steadily. But verifiable. No one with access at a high enough level to make significant requests of the military network is a security risk. Jason kept his voice hard. In addition to all the security measures we employ, I'm a Jedi. It would be next to impossible for one of my senior officers to deceive me that way. Next to impossible, Tycho said, isn't impossible. Give me the passcode, Jason snapped. Reciting from memory, Tycho said, 379HOL44_B921. Jason whipped out his datapad and accessed a file. He scrolled through it for a few moments. Then his expression went from merely angry to angry and confused. Unassigned, he said. Toward the bottom of the unassigned list.
I suggest, Neothel said, that you run checks on the other unassigned codes to be sure they haven't been used as well.
Jason snapped the datapad shut. I'll do that.
And report your findings.
Yes, Admiral. Clearly furious, Jason turned away and avoided eye contact.
Is there anything else?
Neothel asked. Yes. The speaker was a dark-skinned, dark-haired woman, dressed in somber civilian dress rather than in uniform. She was Belindi Kalenda, the Galactic Alliance's Director of Intelligence since the end of the Yuuzhan Vong War. I have one item pertaining to the military. Information has reached me, suggesting that the Confederation is experiencing growing pains, an increased difficulty, as more planets join, with coordinating their respective military forces. Neothel cocked her head at the director.
The only surprising part about that is that they haven't selected a Supreme Commander already.
Not the only surprising part. Admiral, what I'm hearing is that the Bothans have demanded that the Supreme Commander be elected at a face-to-face meeting of representatives from each world in the Confederation. Tycho whistled. Jason nodded, and other officers began whispering among themselves. Neothel said,
That sounds very much like the Bothans. Face-to-face. Rather than communicating across the HoloNet, they can influence the outcome.
Even more than that, Kalenda said, it appears that the Confederation is using this as a recruiting ploy, telling worlds that are still on the fence, join now, and you'll have a chance to send delegates to the election meeting. Your candidate might be our Supreme Commander.
Interesting.
Neothel mulled that over.
How accurate is this information?
It's an absolute that the Hutts have received a join now communication referring to the election, and that the Bothans are in a mad scramble to select the candidate agreeable to the greatest number of relevant politicians.
We have to be there, Jason said.
Neothel nodded.
Colonel Solo is correct. The delegations will include some of the Confederation's best military leaders and brightest minds, not to mention politicians who are very knowledgeable about their world's plans. If we can eliminate the attendees, we reduce the Confederation's planning abilities by a noticeable degree. If we can capture them, we stand to obtain a tremendous amount of critical knowledge. Director Kalenda, please bring a maximum effort to bear on obtaining that information. Don't hesitate to call on us for resources.
Understood, Admiral. Coruscant, Jedi Temple Training Hall.
I think you're taking the whole Sword of the Jedi thing too seriously, Zek said.
In response, Jaina darted in, raising her lightsaber in a horizontal hold. She began a high, sweeping slash, visualizing her attack as she did so. But hers was a feint, and contrary to her visualization, she dipped the tip of the blade well beneath Zek's blocking maneuver and tagged him along his right ribs. The weapon made a zap noise. A practice saber, it gave Zek an electrical jolt instead of a new burn scar to match the one he'd earned not so long ago. He stepped back, rubbing where the blade had touched him.
Hey, you cheated!
Jaina nodded.
I relied on the fact that you anticipate me all the time, because you rely too often on anticipating me.
Maybe so.
And I'm not taking the Sword of the Jedi designation too seriously. How can I, when I don't even know what it means? Not even Uncle Luke really knows what it means. He's never been entirely sure why he said it. Maybe it was the Force speaking through him.
Zek readied his practice saber again.
Maybe it means you're the new chosen one.
Jaina shuddered, then went on guard again.
I hope not. It took my grandfather decades, multiple amputations, and a lot of tragedy to achieve his destiny.
She advanced and threw a probing downward slash that turned into a skittering thrust across the top of Zek's blocking blade. But Zek used his greater reach and height to his advantage, flicking Jaina's point upward so the thrust ended several centimeters to the right of his face. He tried a lateral sweep, but Jaina stood her ground and brought her blade down, catching Zek's attack near her hilt.
Besides,
Jaina continued, her conversational tone suggesting that there was not a lightsaber duel in progress,
there's no Emperor for me to hurl down a well.
There's Lumia.
The voice came from several meters away. Jaina and Zek drew away from each other and looked toward the speaker. Jag Fel sat cross-legged on a practice mat, dressed in his usual black city garb. Jaina realized she hadn't seen or felt him enter.
I wish he wouldn't spy on us, Zek said.
His voice was a murmur, not loud enough to carry to Jag. Jaina deactivated her practice saber. The blade, an electrically charged piece of Durasteel, did not retract.
What about Lumia?
Jag shrugged.
The Chosen One destroyed the leader of the Sith. Lumia's Sith, correct?
Zek deactivated his own blade.
She's what's left of the Sith. I doubt that it will take someone who fills a once-in-a-generation prophetic role, if that's what the sword is, to eliminate her. I'll admit I don't have enough knowledge of the Jedi even to speculate in an informed manner. Good for you.
Jag grinned as though Zek's words were humor rather than insolence. Then he continued.
But I look at it this way. A sword is a weapon. A weapon of the Jedi would be used by the will of or against the enemy of the Jedi. The enemy of the Jedi are the Sith. Another anti-Jedi, whatever they choose to call themselves. The Sword of the Jedi would therefore be someone who is wielded against the Sith. So is that simple, simplistic, or just wrong?
I vote for simplistic. Zek returned his attention to Jaina.
Another round?
Jaina shook her head.
I want to hear this. I've never really gotten the perspective of someone outside the Order. And Jag always has an interesting perspective.
Zek sighed, long-suffering, and reached out a hand. Jaina passed her practice saber to him. Zek dutifully headed toward the rack where practice weapons were stored. Jag offered Jaina an apologetic look.
I'm not sure I have a perspective other than what I just said. But I can speculate.
Please. She moved up to sit on the mat in front of him, duplicating his cross-legged posture.
I'm no more suited to analyze the Force than I am to composing ultrasonic music, since I can't experience either. I just know the little bits I've heard, and that's been added to quite a lot since I've come here. But if the Force was speaking through the Grand Master when he pronounced you the Sword of the Jedi, and if this sword is anything like the Chosen One, then there's some sort of imbalance that needs to be addressed. And that would seem to point to Lumia.
Jaina nodded. Maybe our task force needs to be pursuing her instead of Ali Marar.
Or in addition to, since the two of them were clearly cooperating against the Skywalkers at Roku Depot.
Zek returned to stand over the two of them. I don't think the three of us are a match for Lumia. She fought the Grand Master to a standstill. She's master level. We're two Jedi Knights and one Force-blind space jockey.
Jaina frowned up at him. Zek, that was uncalled for.
I'm just explaining correctly and logically that Fel is not an asset when it comes to matters of the Force.
Zek, stop it.
Implacably, Zek continued.
And this sort of analysis is something that Fel knows quite a lot about.
He turned his attention to Jag.
Didn't you once tell Jaina I wasn't a good enough pilot to join her squadron? Wasn't that cool, level-headed analysis?
Jaina winced. That event had taken place during the Yuuzhan Vong War, on Borlias, and Jaina had let herself be convinced of Jag's point, even though she'd known better. Jag's expression did not change, but he took a long time to formulate a reply.
No, he admitted. That wasn't analysis. That was me being a jealous lover trying to keep you out of the way.
Zek looked startled. Obviously, candor was not what he had expected. Jag gestured up toward Zek.
And that's something you know all about. A lover's jealousy. Otherwise, you wouldn't hover like a brooding hawk bat whenever I walk up to ask Jaina the time.
Jaina felt herself redden.
Jag,
you always know the time. You're just making excuses to talk to her.
Boys, you're making me angry.
Jag began beeping. Rather, some electronic device on his person did, and the beeps were a complicated swirl of musical tones, like an astromech trying to recite poetry, a more elaborate signal than any of the ones either Jedi had heard from any piece of Jag's equipment. Looking startled, Jag pulled his datapad from a pocket.
High-priority flash traffic.
He opened the device, read a few lines, and then began reading aloud.
From the central computer of the Errant Venture. Jedi Temple Holocam recognition and analysis code assigns 94% probability of match to target Ali Marar for attached sequence.
The argument forgotten, Zek sat beside Jaina.
Put it on the big display.
Zek oriented the datapad toward the display that dominated the wall opposite the hall's entryway. He pressed a button, and a moment later the screen glowed into life, playing a holocam recording. It appeared to be from a ceiling-mounted security holocam. It showed a crowd of people, most of them uniformed Alliance military personnel, rushing toward a door. In the midst of them was a well-bundled humanoid female, definitely blue-skinned, possibly Twi'lek, but her face was not large enough on the image for Jaina to recognize. Then Jag's code went active. A wireframe representation of a female Twi'lek body was superimposed over the target. As it conformed to her posture, smaller lines stretched from body parts, foot, shoulder, head, and words and percentile numbers flashed by too fast to read. The wireframe adapted itself further, shortening 1 foot by half its length, causing the left shoulder to droop in a fashion suggesting permanent physiological damage. That sequence ended, and another began. It seemed to follow shortly after the first. The holocam view showed a ship's broad passageway. Uniformed personnel poured into it from a larger chamber. Their movement was restricted by their numbers. The blue female was toward the center of the mass of them, jumping up and down. This holocam view zoomed in and held a still frame. The woman's features were very much like Alima's. The Alima of the Dark Nest. Jag brought up a third file, but it was not the holocam sequence. It was a log of instances of holocam recording glitches recorded aboard Errant Venture. In the areas where the deck plans were not classified, at any rate. The log cited thousands of instances, and a schematic plotted them on those deck plans, showing definite patterns of progression along corridors, through air ducts, through casinos and shopping centers. Clearly, Alima Rar was on Errant Venture, or at least had been when the raw data from this report was compiled, no more than a few days earlier. And Errant Venture was now in the Coruscant system, having been granted the right to ply its trade here after having fled Corellia. Jag stood so fast he could have been yanked to his feet by invisible springs.
Hunts on.
Expressionless, he ran toward the training hall's exit. Coruscant Space, Errant Venture. Walking, half staggering, because the great gambling ship's artificial gravity generators seemed to be phasing on and off, right and left, and had been doing so since she'd downed her sixth whiskey of the evening, Captain Uren Levent turned a corner into the narrow passageway where her cabin was located. The thought of returning to her cabin drew a sigh from her. There was an even odds chance that Alima would be there, skulking, ready to discuss her day's worth of spying failures, ready to offer another set of threats. Upset by the ritual, Levent would take hours to fall to sleep. Nor could she have any company over while the mangled blue Twi'lek was present. Still, it was Alima's Jedi powers that gave Levent the edge at the bedding tables. Whenever Alima watched from a shadowy place, and communicated with Levent with little telekinetic prods, giving Levent a much improved sense of how good the other player's hands were, Levent won big. She won enough to maintain a cabin aboard this pricey flying hotel, enough to buy cargo that would make her next smuggling run a very profitable one, enough to surround herself with the trappings of a life well misspent. She just wished that Alima weren't one of those trappings. But now, as she weaved her way to her door, a shadow seemed to flow off the opposite wall of the passageway and stand over her. Levent reached for her holdout blaster, and was bringing it in line to fire, or at least threaten, when the stranger snatched it from her hand. He didn't aim it back at her. He just held it, barrel down. Levent peered at him, alarmed and suspicious, for the seconds it took to bring his face into focus. Then she recognized him and laughed.
"Colonel Solo," she said, "here to kill me?"
He shook his head and handed her the blaster. "No, I need you."
"Well, I'm not at my best right now, but I'm up for it if you are."
An expression of distaste crossed his face. "Not what I meant."
"I didn't think so. I was just checking."
She replaced the blaster in its hideaway holster, on her third try, then drew her datapad from its pocket and used it to open the cabin door. Beyond was a small chamber, minimal furniture, and no Alima, unless she was under the bed or up in the ceiling somewhere. Levent led her visitor in and immediately sat on the chamber's one chair, leaving Jason to decide whether to take the bed or stand, he elected to stand.
I have need of your services.
I don't think so.
She started to shake her head, but as the motion caused the cabin to sway violently, thought better of it and stopped.
I distinctly remember you saying, I'd never prolong a business relationship with someone who sells the Faline.
Sells out her fellows, Jason corrected. He looked annoyed.
Circumstances change.
And ethics with them. Congratulations. That makes you a smuggler.
He was quiet a moment, as if settling his emotions, then continued.
It's your services as a smuggler I need. Most people connected with the smuggling culture are either staying clear of the war or siding with the Confederation.
And with good reason. You want to put us out of business.
No. I want you all to take up a legitimate business. And if you help me, I'll help you do just that.
Keep talking.
There's going to be a gathering of Confederation warships in a few days. From different systems. Their leaders will meet, they'll elect a joint leader, and then they'll launch against a common target. I need to be at the meeting site to find out who's there. Who's a conspirator?
Just ambush the fleet and sort them out when they're dead.
He waved her suggestion away.
What will it cost me for you to get me there?
I won't do it. You can't be trusted. You sabotage hyperdrives.
A flash of anger crossed his face.
Your hyperdrive did fail.
Of course it did. And I spent several long, long hours thinking I was going to die alone in space. Considering that was on top of having my ship stolen by you, it wasn't a good day. Really, it wasn't.
I ruined two good men because you lied to me the last time we talked.
Levent shrugged.
They weren't good men. They were saboteurs. Incompetent ones, too, since I eventually fixed the drive they sabotaged. They were scum. Like me, remember? You shouldn't rely on scum. Nice boy like you.
Jason closed his eyes and seemed to be counting. Finally, he opened them.
Whatever price we agree to, I'll deliver fully, in advance, to you or your agent of choice, irretrievably.
All right.
Levent didn't have to think for long.
I want to breathe my jets back.
I can't do that within our time frame. It's been overhauled, recommissioned, put into service as a GA transport. It would take weeks or months to detach it from service, bring it here, and work the ownership records.
He thought about it for a moment.
How about a Gallifrey Yards medium transport, 12 years old, seized from Corellia, freshly reconditioned and repaired at the Coruscant Yards, but not yet assigned? I can claim it for GAG and divert it to you. Ownership free and clear.
I agree. Assuming it's fully fueled, armed, provisioned, and not sabotaged.
Understood. What else?
I'm going to need to lay some credits around to buy the information you need. 15-20,000.
Done.
And I want you to get a message to your parents for me.
What?
You can do that, can't you?
What message?
I want them to send me away. Any way to reach them. At my leisure. Just for one transmission.
Do you know them?
No.
Then why?
None of your business. I'll swear to that. It doesn't involve you. It won't do you any harm.
She looked steadily at him. He considered, then said,
All right. I'll find a way.
She smiled at him.
That's it.
I expected you to ask for a lot more than that. Because of injured feelings.
The trick to negotiations, she said, which you'd know if your father had raised you right, is never to ask for so much that the other party would prefer to kill you than to go through with the deal.
Jason considered that, looking at her for a long moment. Then he simply said,
Thank you, and left.
Still smiling, Levant stretched out on the bed. Now she had to figure out just what she'd accomplished. If Alima were here, then that last bit of negotiation was going to get the Solos killed, and Levant freed, unless Alima decided to kill her too, which Levant fully expected the crazy Twi'lek to do. But if Alima hadn't heard this conversation, those negotiations would probably get Alima killed, which was the outcome Levant preferred.
Hey, crazy girl, she said. Are you here?
There was no answer. Levant relaxed. Her eyes closed, and within 2 minutes, she was snoring.